Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. North and South American. All the ships at sea. Let's go to press.
Hello.
And here's the golfer who is the master today, Arnold Palmer.
I think the media is among the most dishonest groups of people I've ever met.
One of the things people love about you is you speak your mind and you don't use a politician's filter. However, that is not without its downsides.
What Boehner is angry with is the American people holding him accountable.
If I become president, oh, do they have problems. They're going to have such problems.
Well, I don't know why that's funny.
It's the Ricochet Podcast. I'm James Lamix. John Gabriel is sitting in for Peter, and of course, Rob Long is here. Our guests, Matt Conanetti from the Washington Free Beacon, and Byron York. Let's have ourselves a podcast. Welcome, everybody, to this, the Ricochet Podcast, number 322. We're brought to you by Texture.com. Does that sound new? It is, and you're going to like this. Texture allows you to breeze through hundreds of your favorite magazines, including back issues, and pick the articles that interest you the most. Get a free trial right now when you go to texture.com/ricochet, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. And we're also brought to you by another proud new sponsor, Trunk Club. You know, it's no secret that a lot of guys aren't great at making time to shop for clothes, but they still want to look good, right? Well, Trunk Club can help. And we're brought to you by The Great Courses. It's always rewarding to learn something new that we didn't know yesterday. And you can do that now. Start your free month today by going to thegreatcoursesplus.com/ricochet. And we're brought to you by this great entity that is itself Ricochet. And here is one of the founders to tell you why it's imperative that you join.
Wow. Well, I think the thank you, James. I think the imperative should be obvious that we run a little business and we have to pay some people. And so we need to make some money. But more than that, what we're trying to do is create a civil conversation on the web, on the center right, a place for people to sort of talk about culture and politics and whatever else they want to talk about in a more civil and rule-based atmosphere, let's put it that way. You know, you can't – no flaming and trolling and obscenities are allowed at Ricochet, unlike everywhere else on the web. And we bring these podcasts to you. We also bring you this great site, Ricochet, and we need members. We need 1,500 new members just to make it, and we're a little short. If you are listening to this podcast, remember, we have almost a million downloads across our all Ricochet Network podcasts, and there are plenty of them, so check them all out, by the way. And, you know, we don't need that many members. And so if you've been thinking about it and you enjoy this podcast and you're not a member, please join Ricochet. It's actually really crucial. It's really, really crucial because we run a business and that's how it works. And it's not like, oh, we want to get rich. It's more like, well, we just want to make our payroll and be able to pay the people who keep the site up and running and going great. So, yeah, if you're thinking about it, do it because it does matter. It does count. You will be saving this business. Go ahead.
Indeed. Well, we're a little short. I'm a little short. You're a little long. And usually this is where we talk to the guy who's a little Peter, but is actually taller than
us. Oh, wow. That was great. Together.
But Peter isn't here. We have he's off on some important business. So John Gabriel is sitting in. Hey, John.
I am just the right size.
There you are, the Goldilocks of host, exactly. of guest host. Well, you know, guys, post-debate, I was thinking – I almost wish that we had a choice between betwixt Gary Johnson and Bernie Sanders, because at least these guys sort of believe in what they're saying and say what they believe. They're nuts, but they don't have the same congenital lying that we saw on display the other day. And we saw two styles of lying. You get the feeling that Hillary Clinton lies with just amazing ease when her interests are threatened. Trump lies when his ego is threatened. And I was thinking about that when it came down to the income tax debate. I have a question for both of you. But I think that Donald Trump has paid income taxes. I think he's in the course of his business and life that he's paid income taxes. But when challenged with the idea that he hadn't, I think he lied about not paying taxes because he found that to be the impressive statement.
Yeah.
Look at me. I didn't have to pay taxes because I'm a smart guy. And that was a lie, even though the end result of it is to say, yeah, you're right. I didn't pay any taxes. And it would have, if I had the money, it would have been wasted anyway. All right. Question. Does this really resonate with people? Because I saw on Twitter all over the place people saying, you know, guys, They like somebody who can screw the government and didn't pay any taxes. That just, it shows he's a canny businessman, and it's a, they like that. They like that about that guy. Really? John?
I think the thing with Trump is, say someone like Mitt Romney makes that claim, he's doomed. But Trump, it's a part of his brand. People know that's who he is. He's Mr. Braggadocio. He has no problem with making himself the hero in every story, as he did continually on debate night. And I think for him as well, with Trump, it's I saw somebody say on social media, Trump is a feeling. It's not fact-based because it's based on a feeling. And that's kind of what you get with him. It's been his brand since he emerged in the 80s as a tabloid figure, and his performance played into it. It was not, you know, once again, on points, Hillary won, but she was terrible too. They were both just awful. It was really painful to get through. The only thing that helped me survive was being in the Ricochet live chat and joking around with people, and I might have had some scotch next to me.
Yeah, you got to be a member to be in the Ricochet chat, just so you know.
But don't put the scotch next to you. Put the scotch in you. Do not, well, don't apply it topically for internal use only. Go on, Rob.
It goes out of one bottle into the other, right? I don't know. I have a different view of this, and maybe I'm just aware that we have now joined the Panoply podcast network, which is run by Slate Magazine. So who knows? There could be some center left folks listening to us. I think it was a pretty unvarnished win for her all around. I get that he was strong and assertive in the first 30 minutes, but that only made the last hour look terrible. You know, his problem is that he keeps thinking he needs to say things to get the applause from the people who love him. And in American politics, that's not how you win. You got to have people who love you, but you also have to have people who are basically indifferent to you but will take a shot on you. Mm-hmm. And Trump, because he's sort of a celebrity more than anything else, is incapable of understanding that somebody that getting a bunch of people, say 10 million, 20 million people indifferent to him is an improvement. He keeps going for the applause. And the only people applauding him in the past week since the debate, and the only people applauding him during that last hour of the debate, were people who love him. And the only people who love this bombastic guy are people who already are going to vote for him. And it's a fundamental fact of American politics that you have to be a little bit bland, right? You have to weasel word it because you need 65 million people to vote for you. That's not an easy thing to do. And to me, it's just staggering that this person is so easily trolled. This guy who is on the web so much and Twitter's on so much that he doesn't understand the basic concept of that social media, which is that you say stuff and you troll people and you get them excited and you get them to respond crazily. And that's part of the fun. And he is the victim of this. I really feel like we're inside this guy's head too much. We're inside – his psychology is so raw. Miss USA, she got really fat. Well, you know, and they show pictures of him and he's really fat. I don't think Hillary's got the stamina. I think she's sick. Well, I'll tell you what. The last 60 minutes of that debate looked like an old fat man with a big red face, wheezing and sniffing his way and gripping that lectern like he wanted to be. And she looked great. I mean, I'm sorry. I think she's a lame, meretricious, money-grubbing, ethical disaster area. She's a hazmat of an ethical swamp, but a Superfund site, someone once said, of ethics. But she beat him, and she looked healthy and strong, and he looked weak.
Yeah, I think so, too. And it doesn't matter whether or not backstage Dr. McCoy was there with a hypo spray, you know, to jam some cortisone aids into her bloodstream, and then they put a 2x4 in her back so she wouldn't fall over. It doesn't matter. She did look great, and she looked confident and maternal, and she cared, and all those other things that you learn to do after a lifetime in politics. And it drove me crazy because the thing is I'm and this is the problem, is I'm watching this debate and I'm committing a horrible mistake, which is to imagine how other Republican candidates from the field might have dealt with her and might have picked these things apart, people who had debate skill. There was a moment where after Trump's – I can't remember what it was. I think she was talking about NATO or something or other. And Trump's response was to talk about the Iran deal as a disaster, as a parenthetical aside en route to saying that NATO should pay more. And he's been saying they need a terrorist unit. And now they have a terrorist unit. I don't know if they're talking to me, if they're listening to me, but now they have it, and that's great. I mean, it was absolute garbled, incoherent word salad. And then they go back to her. And there's this smile on her face, which, again, was supposed to be, I'm sure, show them you're human. Show them you're human. Smile. Yeah, he's not smiling at all. Show them you're human. Put on smile number 47. But there was something
James,
to
– she doesn't have 47 smiles.
Yeah, you're right. You're
she's
right.
She's only got the one.
Well, it's like – you know, it's like HRC 21 emails. You know, it always made me think that the HRC 1 through 20 had been hacked and that she'd gone to 21. So maybe 1 through 46 smiles had become unfashionable. But her smile was something else and her posture was something else. And if anybody remembers debate, if anybody was in high school debate, there was a moment when you would get up and First Affirmative would give your speech. This is the problem. Here's how we're going to solve it. And then the other team gets up and picks your argument apart. You – sometimes got a team where their first negative would get up and instead of picking your arguments apart would present their own ideas, which made you just smile because you knew you had won. They had just seeded the entire debate to you by pulling this bonehead strategy of presenting their own affirmative case. Never won. And so her expression was that it was just sort of this confident, oh God, like a drum. This is mine. This is
right.
In the bank.
Right.
That's what I got from that. And I'm sure other people, anyway, probably.
Can I just share a little weird?
But hold on. I just want to say, because I have to say this, because when you say that you think that she won and that she projected this and that she projected that, by no means is this intended at all as an endorsement. I'm just saying that the simulacrum of humanity up there was much better than his. And I'm still not going to vote for her. And I still hope that she loses. Just wait. You have to say you have to say that on the right now when you criticize Trump and then
isn't
say that Hillary pulled something off. I just want to say it. Not going to vote for her. Hope she loses. Rob, go on.
Well, I will second that, and I will third that actually about
vote for Jesse. Sort of Jesse Ventura, right?
Yeah.
Come in.
You have to bona fide yourself. Here are my bona fides. Yesterday I had a long conversation with somebody who is close to that campaign, the Trump campaign, and they were asking me what I thought that he should do. And usually the first conversation is usually, "Hey, can you write some jokes?" And I never do that for anybody. I can never do that for anybody. My idea of hell is having to write jokes for Donald Trump. He's got a very, very strong personality and a very strong voice. He can write his own jokes. He probably mess them up anyway, because, like, in my experience, most people that you write jokes for, if they haven't written themselves, just mess them up.
My experience that people in real estate and money have the best and the filthiest jokes. The filthiest jokes.
Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of good ones he can't say.
Yeah.
But let me try this out on you as a piece of political advice for him. I said the problem with him is that he's still going after the people who already vote for him, and he's not going after the people who don't really like him. And so his goal should be to charm those people and to sort of assume, the way every American politician does, in October before a November election, that your base is solid and you don't need to get the cheering, you know, MAGA hat-wearing Trumpkins to vote for you into the polls, because they're going to do that anyway. You know, you got 10, 15 million votes you still got to get. And those are people who are on the fence. They're on the fence because they don't really like you that much. So you got to make them like you. That's not that hard. That's the job. So the one thing that Trump can't do, one thing we all know that is charming, here's a charming thing that is charming 101. Say something self-deprecating about yourself. That's charming 101, because what it means is that you live in the real world and you are aware of things, and you are aware that you're a little fat or you're a little short or you have a tendency to talk too much or whatever it is, right? The female problem that he has could be – he could knock it out of the park. The second thing you have to do is you have to be true to yourself. You can't suddenly be somebody else. So you can't suddenly show Donald Trump, you know, in Africa building a well surrounded by little African children, because nobody would buy it, right? You've got to be real. So who's this guy? This guy, he talks, he shoots from the hip, he says what he thinks, he hates political correctness, he sees things clearly, and he's an outsider to politics. So all of your charming stuff has got to be roughly in that realm. So what I said was, why doesn't, you know, when she says, the way you treat and talk about women is terrible. And by the way, that is a very, very effective attack for her, and their new ads against him are extremely effective with the audience they're supposed to be effective with. Why don't you say, yeah, you know, look, I'm not perfect. I'm old school. That's what I am. I'm old school. I was raised old school. I work in an old school business. I made a lot of money in an old school business. And yeah, you know what? Every now and then I cross the line, I regret it. And luckily for me, I raised a brilliant, smart, incredibly entrepreneurial daughter who will give me the business and call me up and kick my butt when I need my butt kicked. And a woman I respect more than any other woman on earth is my daughter. And if anybody talked about her that way, I'd get really angry. So yeah, you're right. I'm trying to get better. I'm trying to get better. But I'm not the only person on this stage who has said really, really, really awful things about women. I'm not the only person on this stage who has trouble in that realm. And you, Hillary Clinton, should be ashamed of yourself for the way you treated those blah, blah, blah. And then go on, right? Then she would, her head would explode. Because the one thing nobody expects from this guy is actual reality and self-deprecation. They don't expect that at all from Trump because he seems preternaturally incapable of doing that. But if he did it, then he'd be inside her head instead of having her be inside his head where she now has taken up a triplex the size of his own spot in Trump Tower. But he can't – and I said, that's what he's got to do. And then there's a long silence on the phone. It's like, yeah, well, he can't do that.
No. So, and that's the amusing thing about this is that everybody on the right has got these great speeches about what he should do. And
yeah.
They're all sensible and none of them get done. None of them get adapted because they're not him. Here's something and I'm going to ask John about this. John, I'm looking at a tweet from Trump's account here. It says, anytime you see a story about me or my campaign saying sources said, all caps, do not believe it. There are no sources. They are just made up lies. Okay, fine. I mean, I like the idea that he tweets like this. I do. I think it's fascinating that we've never seen a presidential candidate take an electric wire and jam it into his id and then attach the other part to the internet. I love that. And I think it's refreshing. And it's one of the reasons people like him. But here's what kind of bothers me. The tweet was made at 2:20 a.m. What is he doing? Is he
you imagine him in a Gold Lamé tracksuit, just sitting there, lying in bed with his laptop. Just, damn kids, what did they say about me this time? Yeah, he is obsessed with his own press, which is never a good thing because you got to be pretty bulletproof. Something they always tell to every, rinky-dink indie band. Okay, don't read the record reviews. Just focus on what you're doing.
We have a president who reads the comments. That's
yeah, yeah. And he probably has about 13 different sock puppet accounts so he can dress people down, angrily shouting at them. And the weird thing about the debate, too, with Trump is he – Hillary said in her convention speech, there's a guy who can be baited with a tweet. And he can. He's baited by near everything. And if the subject would stray to something like, something unimportant like Hillary sharing all of her secrets via her insecure email to the world, essentially, she would make a quick dismissal. I've already talked about this and it was wrong and I've apologized it and I will redouble my efforts in the future. And, Trump would be like, no. Wait, let's go back to the beauty queen calling her Tubby. Well, here's the facts. She got a little Tubby. And it's like, would you quit bringing this on you? And a dynamic that we've seen repeatedly in this candidacy is whoever is getting the most press at the time dips in the polls because nobody likes Hillary and nobody likes Trump other than their, hardcore supporters. But he the entire time spent the debate, no, let's talk about me again, even though almost everything about him was a negative. And I think that's the source of Hillary's big smile. Well, that and her machine code.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the machine code is really pretty flawless, you got to say.
We
saw it break down on 9/11 on that sort of 9/11 thing. But that, look, all of us have had our systems crash.
Well, Putin was hacking her or Trump's son, one or the other, or a 400-pound guy in his basement.
Yeah, a denial of service alert probably.
Right.
Denial of service attack.
Well, I don't have that problem because I have a variety of firewalls and virus protection programs and Trojan horse detectors and all the rest of these things because I am up on my computers. I keep up on my computers.
That's good.
I used to read a lot of computer magazines when such a thing existed. And there was one called, I think, Mac Life.
But you can't keep track of all the magazines.
Oh, it's absolutely
James,
impossible.
Yeah, well, how do you keep track of all the magazines?
These days, is it possible? No, it isn't. And what's more, nobody wants to because
no.
Even though you like –
literally impossible.
Literally impossible.
Yeah, I'm just doing my.
For those of you new in the panel,
I'm just doing my. It's my Ed McMahon. by trademark Ed McMahon.
Yes.
You know, that's amusing. That's really funny, Rob. Because I've watched a great deal of the old 70s Tonight Shows because they've been releasing the Tonight Show in its entirety with commercials. It's a fascinating little time capsule. It's great. And you learn a couple of things.
Wait, with commercials, actually?
Yeah, which I think is very cool. Well, it's on the CDs, the DVDs, and Time Life is releasing them. There's a match made in heaven demographically. So, and I've been watching these, and they're fascinating. I actually take the commercials out because those I can put on YouTube without getting these copyright notices, and it's cool. But you learn a couple of things about Ed McMahon. One, he was a great pitch man. He could sell anything. I mean, that guy was selling pantyhose. And most people don't think of Ed when they think of somebody who's able to move pantyhose, but he did. And the other thing is that when people talk about his deferential role to Johnny, just, you know, oh, yes, sir, and being a toady and a stooge. No, not at all. Not at all. Ed could give as good as he got. And the great thing about Ed was he knew when to wait to slide the knife in. He didn't just jump in like there and stammer and step all over things because really? Johnny would have kicked him to the curb an awful long time ago.
Yeah. My style is slightly different, as you know. My style is to stammer and kind of interrupt inappropriately.
Yes. Well, and having done so, now we applaud you and we're cutting
Thank
to
you.
A spot.
Yeah. Okay.
But I was mentioning Macworld and MacLife and the rest of them and a lot of these magazines. You know, when you go to the grocery store, or you go to the supermarket or the airport and you see that wall of magazines, it's like, oh, that's right. There are magazines in this world because for a lot of us, they've just dropped off the list of things that you do. Everything's gone digital. You don't have the time and a magazine seems like an old encumbrance, but you miss them, don't you? You do. I do. I miss the serendipity of paging through and seeing things. And there's really nothing like the presentation of data in a magazine format to make you to it's a wonderful thing to while some time with. Well, here's the deal. Magazines and the paper in glossy form may not be part of your world anymore, but chances are you've got a device, right, connected to that internet, right? That's where Texture comes in. Texture.com, they've completely reimagined magazines, giving you the articles and the stories you really want in one place, plus the interactive features and the videos and the recommendations made just for you. The Texture app lets you tap into the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or your tablet. You can breeze through hundreds of your favorites, including back issues as well, and pick the articles that interest you the most. Texture's made it easy for you to find the articles you care about. Now, I'm looking at my app right here. I've got National Geographic, Condé Nast Traveler, Maclean's, so I can keep up on Canada, Islands, Midwest Living, Maxim, Mid-Modern Farmer, New York Magazine, Reminisce, Smithsonian, Atlantic, Hollywood Reporter. These are all the magazines that I have that I can browse back and forward to. And I can assemble my own personal collection, so whenever I turn the app, there's something new for me to read. Now, sign up for Texture right now and gain insider access to all the content from the world's best publications. Best part, we're offering you a free trial right now when you go to texture.com/ricochet. Immediate entry to all of the top magazines, including back issues and bonus video content. So start binge reading. You know, you've been binge watching. Binge reading is a little bit better for you, perhaps. Do it right now at texture.com/ricochet. That's texture.com/ricochet. And we thank texture.com for sponsoring this, the Ricochet Podcast. We now go to our first guest, Matt Conanetti, Washington guy. He's the editor-in-chief of the Free Beacon. And in his spare time, he's a big movie and TV geek as well. Perhaps we'll talk about that since we're living in the golden age of television, less so movies perhaps. And I can't wait for Rob to ask a pertinent, pointed question on television. And I'm just going to... Not Ed McMahon my way into that. Don Rickles my way into that.
You will Don Rickles your way into that. I know you will. And look, Rickles is still, I mean, I still point people, I don't know, this is a complete digression, but I still point people to Don Rickles' performance, 10-minute performance, that he gave at the second Reagan inaugural Kennedy Honors, something or other. They had a big celebrity salute to President and Mrs. Reagan on TV. And that's kind of old. It was 1984. We had that salute to President Mr. Reagan. Don Rickles gave a 10-minute bit, did a 10-minute stand-up bit. That was one of the funniest things I've seen in my entire life. Really killer and incredibly tough on Reagan and Mrs. Reagan. He had more courage standing up to the president than any comedian today with Obama. I mean, my God, the way they treat Obama. Rickles just eviscerated Reagan and Nancy. And they would cut to them. And Reagan was like almost out of his chair. He was like heaving with – crying with laughter. Nancy, not so much. But Reagan definitely. So
he could barely breathe. That is a fantastic routine.
Yeah, it was, and it was like, and it was funny. Like, it was, he said a bunch of, I was in the round, and Rickles said a bunch of mean things about Nancy, and then he turned around, and he looked at the other side of the audience, and he said in his microphone, "Is she looking at me? Is she looking at me?" And the people just explained, no one had ever done that before, and he had the courage to do it. No comedian today would ever go and say anything tough about Obama. They're just too busy bootlicking. Anyway,
well, Matt Cunanity,
you
there in Washington in the throbbing heart of the beast, a lot of people say that one of the reasons that we have Donald Trump as a presidential candidate is because of this, one of the correspondence dinners where everybody unloaded on him. And he became so furious and wounded by that. It was one of those, well, I'll show you decisions that he made. Tell me about how Washington right now is dealing with the Trump zone. And does anybody there think that that's what's coming and is preparing themselves accordingly?
The Trump slide?
Yes.
The major Trump victory? Yes. No, I don't think anyone here in Washington is expecting it. I'm much more open to the possibility than I think almost everybody in the media, conservative and liberal, is. But I agree, James, with the idea that Trump may have been partially motivated to enter politics after that experience at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, because we just look at his behavior over the last week, where he's gone after Miss Piggy, Machado, the beauty queen, simply because he was caught unprepared for the attack at the debate. So the kind of the thin skin nature of Donald Trump, and also the relentless counterattack when someone calls into question things he said in the past or actions he's taken, anything involving his personal behavior. Was on full display this week. So you can kind of see how driven he is by a feeling of being wronged or being misrepresented.
Hey, Matt, it's Rob Long. How are you? Thanks for joining us. Let me ask you this question. Do you think, people are saying now, like, well, you know, she just figured it out. They knew he was going to do this. Did they have any idea he was going to, like, kind of go nuts about this stuff? Or they just think you just poke the bear as many different ways as you can poke the bear, and then eventually the bear just turns insane?
Well, look, I think Hillary won the debate on points, but I'm not actually sure what practical effect it's going to have in the outcome of the race. And I think that the media, while understanding that Hillary won the debate on points, has been completely over the top in its coverage of the event. I mean, you pay attention to the media over the last few days, you would think that the election was held on Monday night. And that one debate victory, and of course Trump's response after, is going to seal the deal for Hillary Clinton. I just don't think that's the case. I said we still have two more presidential debates. We have a vice presidential debate next week where you're going to get different stories. You have Trump's behavior. Of course, Trump's behavior is not new. He goes
right
through one of these routines that every quarter or so.
But it's fair to say. But every quarter or so, there aren't any quarters left. Every quarter or so, he goes through one of these. He drops. He drops 5, 6, 7, 8 points in the important states. He's running out of time, right? I mean, isn't the level of interior correction and disarray in that campaign at this moment this is how big it is. It's so big that I know about it. And I don't know about it just by reading the newspaper. That's how big it is.
Just 2 points. And I agree with you. One is I think it's maybe likely, because remember, after each of the routines, he changes his campaign staff. So I wouldn't be surprised if we have another campaign manager, campaign chairman, before election day.
Maybe me.
It could be you, since now you have all these great sources. I would say this, though. There is still time. There is still time. Obama lost that first debate. Now, granted, he was an incumbent president, whatever. But we still have 40 days, and a lot can happen in 40 days. And I think Iowa hawk David Burge put it the best, which is he said, this game, this presidential race is a football game that's 24-24 all safeties, and whoever loses has the ball last. And if on election day and the 2 days before election day or the 3 days before election day, we're not talking about Donald Trump, but we're talking about something with Hillary Clinton or something has happened in the world that reflects poorly on Hillary Clinton's judgment and her policies, then I think Trump is just as
competitive. Well, but hold on a second. But we're not that we have that stuff now and we're not talking about it. Every day there's something new about the Clinton Foundation. I mean, today I think it was what did it have to do? Oh, it's Greek. There was a brother-in-law of one of Hillary or somebody who was connected to the Greek investment firm, and was there information passed from state to him and the rest of it? That's every day. The Trump stuff comes out once a week, where you get the Cuba thing, which sounded big, and then you get the he stiffed me out of $30,000 for a piano thing, which is also, you know, an interesting story. But the amount of stories that we could be talking about Hillary, we aren't. The media isn't. So even – I mean, it's almost as if there's a little protection of her, wouldn't you say, Matt, that keeps some of these stuff from being brooded about and talked?
The media is afraid of the Trump presidency and is doing its best to shield Clinton. Yes, absolutely. But that doesn't mean that things don't break through. I mean, just think about where we were before the debate. It wasn't the Trump campaign that was in free fall. It was her campaign. That video that she released where she screamed at the union members asking you why she isn't winning by 50 points, that was terrible. The health scare 2 weeks before, that was terrible for her. Not only the image, which was a little bit disconcerting, but the kind of bodyguard of lies that surrounded it and has surrounded questions, legitimate ones, about what exactly her health status is, and also just, you know, whether it's a foundation or what or anything.
And all that stuff.
That these things change on a dime. These things change on a dime. He lost the debate. He has definitely lost the post-debate spin, or at least lost any opportunity to get on some kind of safe issue terrain for him. And if he continues to lose, then yeah, he's done. But I just think 40 days, something else is going to happen.
Okay, so all right, yeah, big bold prediction. Let me ask you this, Continetti. Pick a side. Two questions, and then I'll leave you over to John Gabriel to continue a more elevated plane. One, who do you think is going to win in November in a month? And two, who do you want to win? Don't you weasel a word out. Don't you weasel out on the second one. I want to know.
I honestly don't. And I don't mean this as weaselly. I don't know. And I say this just because I really detest Donald Trump. On the other hand, I feel that the left is getting out of control. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes think that maybe the only thing that would kind of arrest the left in its overreach would be just the traumatic shock of a Trump victory.
that is a delicious thing to think about, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the way but Trump presidency would be this past week. There's no question about that. It would be a constant. What would be this periods of semi-normality interrupted by a recurring routine of just absurd reality TV over-the-top nonsense. And what that does to the world is kind of frightening as well.
Right.
So, again, I don't know who I want to win. And who is going to win? I mean, I've always thought she's the likely winner. That said, I had been surprised by a few things. One is the tightening in the polls pre-debate, and we'll see what effect really the debate has, or whether that effect lasts through the election, like I said. Two, I think the genuine concern Democrats have at Hillary Clinton's failure to reconnect and re-energize with the coalition that brought Barack Obama to office. You see the stories, you continue to see the stories about young voters, about minority voters who don't seem that enthused about voting for her. There are stories that are out this week about the ground games in places like Florida and Nevada where Democrats in the field are saying, well, we're having a difficult time getting people to vote. And then you ask yourself, okay, who has the message in this election? It's clear Donald Trump has had the message of this election since he came down that escalator on June 16th, 2015. Who has the base in this election? He has a base. It's the poorly educated, as he called them. It's whites without college degrees. This base is motivated. This base is attached to him. And then you wonder, I mean, were those two things enough? Typically, that's a successful presidential campaign. You have a good message. You have a base of support that you can then expand on. Now, the roadblock is he's never been able to expand the base. And then the question is, are there people who are basically, like you saw in the Brexit vote, like you saw in the Tory victory last year, are there just stealth Trump voters? Are there people who just will not say in public that they're going to vote for Donald Trump because of the social stigma that will result from it? And if so, how many are there? And if there are enough that it means 1 or 2 points, if you go into this election with it basically being a jump ball, then we could come out of it with him winning. So I think she's likely, but I wouldn't be surprised if he wins.
Now, Matt, this is John
Gabriel.
Does that
answer your question, roughly?
Yeah, it answers my question.
I was met with stunned silence.
No, I was on mute. I was letting John take the next one, but I was I was thinking more like, yeah, I guess I have to agree with all of that. That all makes sense to me. But the only thing I would say as an aside is that I think he will lose, and I hope that the next Republican nominee or even the next set of nominee hopefuls learn something from him, because I think he's done an amazing job connecting to a lot of voters, and that is a thing that, yeah, a lot of Republicans have not been able to do. So maybe they're just getting the most harrowing media consultancy ever in a Donald Trump nomination. I'm sorry. I'll give you John. Take it. I'm sorry.
All right. This is John Gabriel. Matt, welcome here. Just continuing this, Hillary, you know, we had this health scare, I-9/11. I know that you wrote about it. And what's interesting is Democrats seem to be toggling between overconfidence and utter panic. Just repeatedly, when she started dropping in the polls, I think that's one reason Lester Holt was so tough on Trump and made the issues things like birtherism and the like, is because he saw what happened to Matt Lauer when he asked equally tough questions to Hillary and Trump. And so you see a little bit of the circling of the wagons here. What should Democrats do? We're always talking, being on the center right, we're always talking about, okay, here's what Trump should be. He should be more disciplined. He should pivot to this group. But what should Democrats do? Because I think something that the Team Clinton is worried about is you still have all these hacked emails out there. I'm sure they're holding some particularly juicy ones for this upcoming month. What would your advice be to them to just kind of right the ship
the easiest thing for the Democrats to do to win this election would be to replace their candidate. I mean, I think that's their problem. She's an awful candidate. I mean, Trump has historically high unfavorable ratings, but she has the second most historically high unfavorable ratings. And if Bernie Sanders were the nominee, if Elizabeth Warren were the nominee, if Joe Biden were the Democratic nominee, they would be winning by 10 points. I truly believe that. So that's it. Of course, they're not going to do that. It's going to be her. So what else could they do? I don't know. You know, you see, the Senate races are fascinating. Even though Clinton has her maintained basically a 2-point lead, 2 to 3 point lead now, in all the poll averages, the Democrats are losing any chance of retaking the Senate. Ohio's off the map, not only in the Senate race, by the way. The New York Times today concedes Ohio to Trump. It's fascinating. Front page article in the New York Times saying Ohio no longer a bellwether. Isn't that funny? It's no longer a bellwether when Trump is going to win. It's only the state that typically goes with the winner of the presidential election. But, you know, it's going for Trump this year, so I guess it doesn't mean anything. Ohio's off the map. Portman's got that in the bag. Everybody knows that. I think Florida's increasingly off the map for the Democrats, too, with Rubio. Heck, there's in Nevada, and I was meaning literally, heck, in Nevada, is maintaining a lead. Even he's outrunning Trump in Nevada and recent polls. And Trump, actually, Nevada is pretty close for Trump too. So I think the Democrats are in a tough spot. I think they've radicalized their party base, and yet they have establishment politicians there who don't really have any gut connection with that base. And so they're in a bad spot. after 2016, just like the Republicans at the presidential level might be.
Matt, my fear is that Minnesota will actually be in play because my entire position is predicated on the luxury that my vote in Minnesota doesn't count. If it actually gets to be tight, I may be in that situation where it comes down to one guy and everyone's looking at me. You said before that you don't like Donald Trump. And of course, as a elite, effete Washington insider, that means that your tender, delicate sensibilities are abraded by his brash manliness. I know that, of course. It's either that or you fear the loss of your GOP establishment connective power. I mean, those are the only two reasons. But when it comes to a real man, you wrote a piece about a real manly man that apparently you didn't approve of. Another one in the list of people with testosterone that Matt just can't stand, and that's Gene Roddenberry, the great bird of the galaxy. You slagged Roddenberry in a piece that said that he actually may not have been the philosophical genius king that we all thought he was. We got about 45 seconds left with you here. Please do expand on that, because I'm so tired of his endless legacy being burnished as though this guy is up there with the greats. He can be a wagon train to the stars. Nice elevator pitch, but after that, a bit of a dolt.
Yeah, I urge everybody interested in Star Trek to read the piece. It's on freebeacon.com, The Great Bore of the Galaxy, and it goes into quite detail. But I'll say, Jane, I was not surprised to make this. I was surprised by this thesis of mine, and that is I just started reading, because I'm a Trekker, I started reading these huge books, 1,000-plus total pages, of oral history of the Star Trek franchise for the first 50 years. It celebrated its 50th year. And I was just agog at the stories of Gene Roddenberry, what a lout he was, how inept and bad a writer he was,
yeah.
how insecure he was. And this is not, you know, Matt Continetti, effete establishment conservative, talking here. It's all documented in this book. These are the writers who worked under him, some of his closest friends. Of course, his first wife and his two daughters of that wife won't even go on the record with them because they're estranged. It was just an eye-opening thing for somebody. You know, the Star Trek franchise is such an amazing thing. I guess I'll close on this. Today, they've released a Trekkers Against Trump Facebook page that's kind of been organized by George Takei and J.J. Abrams. It's become politicized in a way, Star Trek has, that just illustrates the politicization of the private sphere. That is happening in this country, and I think is one reason so many people are driven to embrace Donald Trump and kind of the rejection of normality as we understand it that he represents.
It's always been political, and I think Scotty would have voted for Trump. Matt, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you later down the road, and I appreciate you being on the podcast today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
The other great thing about Star Trek,
though,
I should have Matt on my ramble and talk about this with Tevi, and we can go back and forth. So many aspects of it.
Invite me.
Oh, yeah, that'll be fun. You and Peter. Sometimes it's the guns. Sometimes it's the technology. And sometimes in those early shows, it was the women, because they were dressed by a guy named William Ware Thice. I think I'm pronouncing that probably incorrectly, who did he was a costumer in the business for a long time. He did Spartacus. He did The Next Generation. But he created these gravity-defying outfits for women that were just incredible. He had quite the eye for that. But, you know, a lot of guys, even though they like to look at clothing on women, don't necessarily like to look at it on themselves or face the prospect of having to go and get it. That's the thing. I mean, if somebody could just show up at your doorstep and say, here's something that looks good, that'd be great. Well, that's exactly what the modern world has brought to us now. And no, I'm not talking about Amazon drones delivering your underwear. No. It's no secret that a lot of guys aren't great at making the time to shop for clothes. They may have a good eye. They may know what they want. But who has the time? But you still want to look good, right? Well, that's where Trunk Club can help. Building a great wardrobe takes time, and it's something a lot of people are short on. But fall weather demands beautiful, well-made clothes to keep you warm. And if you're stressing about finding time to shop for fall essentials, well, relax. Trunk Club can help. Here's the deal. Trunk Club makes it easy for you to look your best in clothes that fit you perfectly and look amazing. They're handpicked by your own personal stylist. That's the deal. So you go to trunkclub.com/ricochet. Type in your measurements, share your likes and your dislikes, and Trunk Club will send a trunk of clothing straight to your door, handpicked by your own stylist. Now, Trunk Club is backed by Nordstrom, so, okay, stylists have access to some of the best designer brands in the world. Try on your stylist selections, keep what you like, send back what you don't. Your stylist takes the time to understand your unique look. This evolves over time, if you wish, and they'll build a perfect fall wardrobe with timeless classics, well-made layers, and other seasonal essentials. And if you live in Dallas, New York, L.A., Chicago, D.C., or Charleston, you can stop by one of the Trunk Club clubhouses to work with your stylist in person for free. Drunk Club is not a subscription service, so don't worry about some returning charges. Order clothes whenever you like from your stylist. Take 5 days to try it on, and returns are always free. So get started today at trunkclub.com/ricochet. That's trunkclub/ricochet. trunkclub.com/ricochet.
And now, I think we need a few minutes for Byron, but I just want to like say I was a Trunk Club user customer back in the day, and I still am. And what I liked about it was just as a personal testimonial, just so, because you know, these are important. These are our sponsors, and they really are good guys. This thing arrives, and like it's super easy to return it. Like I am super lazy, so when it was described to me, I was completely not. Not interested until I realized that no, they send you the box they send it to you is the box you can return stuff in, and it includes strips of tape for you to tape the box back up. And to me, that was like, you people understand me. Anyone who understands that I don't want to hunt around for tape and I get a packing label that's already pre-printed, I just stick on it. That person is like, that company gets my whole world, because I don't want to do anything other than the bare minimum. To do it. And then the good thing is that the clothes are actually cool. You look good. You don't look weird. That's the other thing I'd say to Ricochet listeners. You don't look weird. You'll look great, but you won't look like you are, walking down the runway at Milan Fashion Week like a weirdo. You're going to look like a normal person, but you're going to look like a cool normal person. So that's probably terrible ad copy, but I'm just giving you my own personal testimonial for why – and why I think that this all this new stuff is really – all the new sort of web-based businesses are so cool, because they're removing that – the thing that you really bugs you is the thing that they take away, not the thing that they think bugs you, but the thing that really does bug you. No tape, stuff like that. Anyway, I'm done.
I'm waiting for a few years from now when sedation dentistry is performed by drones.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just go out
with robots, right?
Just go out and sit on the porch, wait for the thing to come by. Nice little injection, jaw goes slack. You know, they work on you. I don't know how dentists get in there anyway. It's a mystery to me. John, you're there in Arizona, so you have a fairly it gets really, really, really hot there, but it doesn't get really, really, really cold in your part of the world, does it? I mean,
not really. Well, the funny thing is if the temperature drops below 50, locals are wandering the streets dressed up like Ernest Shackleton or something.
right.
Touch up a little bit, guys. This is embarrassing me. And I've lived here almost my whole life. I think part of it with me is I am not built for this environment. My family originally, I wasn't born there, but both my parents are from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, a good Finnish stock. And I used to always ask my parents, how the heck did we end up in Phoenix exactly? Because I started to turn pink after it hit 75. But they're like, okay, spend a winter in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. About February, they looked on a map and said, what is the opposite of this? Yeah. Went from one extreme to the other. But more praise for Trunk Club. I used one of their cheaper copycat places, and now I'm wearing an ascot, a monocle, and cargo. So do not accept any imitators.
I don't know. That sounds a good look, actually.
There's an article in New York Magazine or New Yorker or New York Times or one of those places in the center of the universe about cargo shorts, again, because they're mad that guys wear them. And it said – they had somebody quoted as saying that cargo shorts show that you really don't care what people think of you and your appearance. And that really is a form of privilege. 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 And so I'm imagining somebody saying, you know, when women lounge around the house in loose-fitting athletic clothing and you really can't see their – it shows that they're really – they don't care about being they've given up and they don't care what you think of what they're wearing. That's really a form of female privilege. You say that and Jezebel harpies will be blackening the sky within –
it's like calling a Miss USA, Miss Universe fat. You know, you can't do that either.
Can't do that. Well, New York, New York, New York. And then there's the Byron version of that. Byron York is the chief political correspondent of the Washington Examiner, Fox News contributor, author of The Vast Left-Wing Conspiracy. And you can follow him on the Twitter at Byron York. Welcome back to the podcast. What's new?
Thanks. Good to be here.
Hey, so Byron, it's Rob Long. Where are you right now?
I'm in a car in Northwest Washington, heading to 400 North Capitol, where Fox News is.
Oh, I no. That's I guess that was a little too personal question. I thought maybe that you were on the trail somewhere. We spent the beginning. I guess the trail now is watching cable news, right? Because at least one major candidate, until, that's all he does.
Until I got in the car, I was actually at home watching a live stream of Hillary Clinton's speech in Fort Pierce, Florida. So, I mean, the great thing about this campaign is when you're not out traveling, you can still watch stuff as it happens in its entirety.
Yeah.
So, for example, I had been. So, when are we going to play this? When does this thing actually play?
Tomorrow. Still. Yeah.
Okay. So I was thinking about a story on Hillary Clinton's speeches, and so I was going back and either looking at the speeches or looking at the transcripts, because actually her campaign's pretty good about sending out transcripts, and at this stage of the campaign, they're usually on Nexus. So there's this incredible amount of information that's available to you, on your couch.
Right.
So you got to go out. You have to go out and see stuff. But when you can't, there's a lot you can see at home.
All right. Well, yesterday in the New York Times, big piece about disarray in the Trump camp. Lots of sources that were on deep background. Today at 2:30 in the morning, 3 in the morning, depending on where you are, depending on where he was, Republican candidate Donald Trump tweeted that you can't trust those sources. So I guess what he used to say was like, I've been reading or I read it. It's people have been reporting back in the day when it was Rafael Cruz killing Kennedy. Now we can't trust sources. Let me ask you something, not ask you to reveal any sources, but if you had to characterize the Trump inside the Trump campaign, would you say it's sanguine? Would you say it's in disarray? What would you say?
Well, it's never been what you would call a tight, well-oiled machine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Before the debate, they were really fairly optimistic. There was optimism growing inside the campaign because of the polls. Everything's from the polls. And there was hope that he could at least fight Hillary Clinton to a draw. They believed that a draw in this debate would be a win for them. And they had, done a fair amount of preparation. After the debate, obviously what you're seeing is what you always see when something goes badly, is you're seeing people pointing fingers at each other, as well as talking about how it'll be done differently the next time. So that's kind of where we are right now with the Trump campaign, except that Trump himself, not really the campaign people, but Trump himself got kind of totally distracted by this Alicia Machado thing, this Universe stuff, and has given the press what it needs to just keep talking about that. And so he can go make a speech. He made a speech, gosh, was it yesterday? And I'm trying to remember where he spoke yesterday. It was a very good speech. He was quite well disciplined, focused on the issues. Just a really solid speech. Well, he can do that till the cows come home if he tweets something at 3:30 in the morning saying you should watch, Miss Venezuela's sick.
Right.
That's just how the world works in this campaign.
So let me ask you, maybe this is too much meta questioning, but it seemed to me like when the Clinton operation starts to wobble, even when under Bill Clinton's administration and Hillary Clinton's, her organization, when they make mistakes or there's trouble, what you read in the paper, what reporters report, are aides pointing fingers at each other. There's usually, you can tell that someone's going to take a fall. With Trump, it feels to me, and maybe I'm misreading it, that when you read pretty much the background stuff, you read in the Times and in all the papers, it's the aides pointing fingers at the candidate, saying, well, we did our best, but this guy won't. here are the things he won't do.
Well, they're actually using the papers to try to send a message to the candidates. This has happened a lot before when they're trying to get him to. Basically, the issue is, you know, how to get him to listen to something.
Right.
And there's a pattern in Trump's campaign in which he lets things get really, really bad before he picks. And sometimes, you know, it looks like he's not going to fix it at all. So I should have something on the tip of my tongue about this. But this has happened before. And basically, a bunch of unnamed aides, you know, started talking to the papers.
Right.
To essentially send a message to Trump. And
clearly, that's so weird. That's so weird.
They were sending a message to Trump about the next debate, saying, you know, you got to prepare for the next debate. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if they start sending messages to Trump about Twitter. Because the Twitter was, I think the... I think the tweet that you cited saying don't believe the source is about 3:20 Eastern time. And then about 5, in the 5 o'clock hour, a.m. hour, he tweeted a couple of tweets about Alicia Machado. So, you know, these are times when Killian Conway
But Byron, I got to say, they're tweeted from an Android. Now, doesn't Donald Trump have an iPhone? Does he have two? Does he have two devices? I thought he said he only had one device. Or
I have to plead ignorance on that because I was listening to Hillary's speeches all morning. Are they from an Android and not from an iPhone?
So, I believe James that he chose to have only one device for convenience.
Yes, I think so.
Just like Hillary Clinton. I'm sorry, John.
I don't know. I thought he always. Tweeted from an iPhone, but if he's tweeting from an Android, I don't know.
Well, I think what Trump's trying to do is prove that he has stamina, unlike the other candidates. So he doesn't even need sleep.
Well, he doesn't sleep. I mean, come on, guys. You know, he really doesn't sleep very much.
And, not at all.
Different people need different amounts of sleep, but he doesn't seem to need much, and he's up a lot. And he has got himself into trouble. In the middle of the night, or at the fringe hours, you know, late at night or early in the morning, a number of times when he presumably doesn't have anybody else around him to tell him to be careful.
You just imagine a sort of Citizen Kane figure, you know, standing in the window of the 50th floor looking at his hand saying, they're perfectly fine fingers. They're perfectly long fingers. John?
If John Foster Kane had an Android, that would be good.
As opposed to the Democratic candidate who is an actual android. This is John Gabriel, editor at Ricochet. And one thing Trump's doing, and I noticed that you noted it on Brit Hume's show on Fox, is he's showing a bit more discipline. And we've kind of seen this more disciplined Trump in fits and starts. We saw it when he went down to Mexico City and the like. But he's doing a lot fewer interviews. He's not giving these kind of almost Andrew Breitbart style press conferences where he just riffs and, you know, badgers reporters who ask him silly questions and the like. But he seems to be appearing on Fox News almost exclusively these days. Now, is that a good strategy? Because it seems like the dedicated Fox viewer is pretty much in his camp since the network, or at least a lot of the network's personalities, have been giving him attention. Should he be reaching out to these moderates or even the disaffected who can't handle any cable news?
Well, there's a couple ways to look at it. One, you know, when he got himself in trouble in the past, he got himself in trouble basically by either giving interviews or by, you know, some really indisciplined thing that he said in a speech. For example, he got himself in trouble over Judge Curiel by, you know, bringing it up in a speech. He was in Southern California and just kind of brought it, the whole Trump law, the university stuff up, and it was ridiculous. So that's how he did that. And then he made it worse in an interview where he said, you know, he's Mexican and I'm going to build a wall. And then he got himself in trouble in the Khazir Khan thing after the Khazir Khan hit at the Democratic convention. Trump did interviews. I believe one with George Stephanopoulos, and he got himself in trouble with that. So, you know, the press people are saying, well, one of, I mean, Trump press people are saying, you know, do fewer interviews. And so he's kind of gotten his stump speech almost under control. It's basically a teleprompter speech with digressions that Trump likes to make, but not, he hasn't really gotten himself in trouble much lately. But he's also cut way back on the number of interviews. And the last one, the big one he did for press, was with the Washington Post, in which he got himself in trouble over the birther issue. So the question is now, with what, 39 days left, you know, due to a lot of interviews. So the strategy has been basically to call in Fox and Friends, have an interview, try to bring up some issue that you want to be the theme for the day, and then go from there. Go out and make your speech and try to make news maybe in the speech, but don't do interviews, don't do other interviews, and don't go wild in your speech. That might work if you weren't tweeting about Miss Universe and the sex tape. So the Trump campaign's challenge all along has been to try to, you know, impose some sort of discipline on him. And I think that, as Jimmy Carter famously said after the Iranian rescue raid, it's been an incomplete success.
Byron, last question. Next debate is, do we see a Donald Trump, a different Donald Trump? Because we saw a different Obama after Romney cleaned his clock. What are you looking for in the next debate?
Yeah, I don't know. We're talking about October 9th in St. Louis. And, you know, I think, you know, Ann Coulter gave him good advice. You should listen to Ann Coulter. I mean, Ann Coulter said that Trump does well when he talks about issues, and badly when he talks about himself, and that he should have Pavlovian training to not get distracted by irrelevant issues. And, I mean, they should, like, I guess, put him up by a podium and give him a little electric shock every time he, you know, goes down some rabbit hole. But, you know, that's what Ann Coulter, who's maybe his biggest fan, wants him to do. But is he going to do it? You know, we'll see.
Thanks for joining us. Hope to talk to you again before the election. And, of course, we will talk afterwards for the postmortem. Byron, you're
welcome.
See him in all the usual places, and we thank him for being on this, the Ricochet Podcast, again.
Thanks, Byron. Byron.
It goes back
to what we said at the beginning, months and months ago. If this election's about Hillary Clinton, then Trump wins. If it's about Donald Trump, then Hillary wins. But unfortunately, both candidates seem to want to make it about Donald Trump. And I just, as I said to some people recently who were close to that campaign, I don't see how you get out of that. I don't see how you get out of that death spiral unless you charm the 15 million people who are on the fence. And the only way to do that, the best way to do that, the easiest way to do that is with self-deprecating humor. I will not criticize my opponent's relative youth and inexperience, said Ronald Reagan, to great effect. He bit off the fact that he was old, and he made a joke about it. Reagan was incredibly good at this stuff, and I'm not saying be more like Reagan. I'm saying that was a very, very effective tactic. I'll try to keep my charisma in check, said George H.W. Bush. These are things that normal people say when they're trying to be charming.
Right.
And, it shouldn't be that hard.
If you are a narcissist, is it too much to ask that you add a little sociopathy to the mix so that you use the part where you charm people and you use your skills because essentially they are just objects to you? I mean, you would like that. It would be necessary. I was reading a piece about something that Trump said in 2008, that he was happy when Nancy Pelosi came in and thought she was going to do great things, loved the Clintons, and he wished that Nancy Pelosi had impeached Bush. Wanted him to impeach George Bush, and was running down Bush and saying that he says he reads a book a week. Do you think he reads a book a week? And he laughs because Bush, of course, is stupid, and that's how you get people to like you in New York. I think Bush did read a book a week. He liked to learn things. Everyone likes to learn something that they didn't know yesterday, and that's why we are having subscription offers to you for the Great Courses Plus now, so you can learn something tomorrow that you didn't know today. It's an unlimited on-demand access to a large library of engaging video lectures that are presented by award-winning professors and experts. Learn as much as you like about topics that interest you, like history or politics or even cooking and photography. The Great Courses Plus is currently adding new subjects, new lectures, new professors, so there's always something new to learn. You don't sometimes even know what it is that you don't know until you find the subject and you say, oh, on this, I am utterly ignorant. Let me get up to speed. Or you can add to the store of knowledge that you already have. In fact, they just added a couple new courses that you should check out. One of them is an economic history of the world since 1400. We think of the Middle Ages as nothing but mud and serfdom and nothing happening. But no, it actually was quite a dynamic time in which many of the economic structures we have today arose. And English, grammar boot camp. Yeah, trust me, no matter how good you speak, how well you talk, you can probably correct something. And you can stream the Great Courses Plus anywhere, anytime, from any device. Now, here, we want you to go sign up for the Great Courses Plus today. And as one of our listeners, you'll get an entire free month of unlimited access to all of their lectures when you sign up. So we're looking for new stuff. Add them to your watch list. See what's coming up. Start your free month now. Start learning now by going to thegreatcoursesplus.com/ricochet. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/ricochet. And we thank the Great Courses for sponsoring this, the Ricochet Podcast. A little combination of some news and some member chat. Of course, the member feed is where so much fun happens, and you don't get it until you're a member. You look at the front page of Ricochet and you say, all these podcasts, all these great posts, all this stuff. But then you realize when you're a member, you get access to the stuff behind the curtain, where there's all kinds of wonderful, bubbling, contentious debates. And there's a couple of things. Hercules Rockefeller had a piece about George Will, the GOP, and conservatism, in which he said that Donald Trump is the result of failure of the GOP to be a vehicle for conservatism. George Will is an example of the failed conservative elite. Now, the movement will survive because our ideas are correct and timeless. However, it's time we considered changing the way we sell it and spread it. George Will is right that nothing lasts. The old guard elite conservative punditry that he represents have failed conservatism, the country, and should be left behind with the current GOP leadership. It's hard to admit, but we're losing the battle for the country. We need a new plan and new leaders. And that dovetails with something else the New York Times wrote the other day about how Donald Trump set off a civil war within the right-wing media. I don't think it's that big of a civil war in as much as, you know, it's pretty lopsided who's with him, and it's only a rear guard that's holding out. But, John, let me ask you, at the end of this, let's say, and answer this, if Hillary wins or if Trump wins, what exactly is the movement going to look like and what is the media going to look like? 45 seconds.
I think, and please excuse me, my landline has begun to ring, so forgive that interruption.
You have a landline? Come on.
Yeah, we still do. We still
do. Cord cut, baby, like the millennials.
I know. I'm not hip enough. I'm not even on the Snapchat. I think the thing several months ago I wrote a piece kind of playing off Disney's Wreck-It Ralph, just calling it Wreck-It Donald, because it seems like wherever he has insinuated himself, he creates division instead of unity. And you see even people who pretty much every conservative distrusted, like early on, Romney, for instance, by the time the voting rolled around, you had rock-ribbed conservatives who campaigned viciously against Romney, convincing themselves, no, this guy's going to win. We can do this. We can do this. Get the vote out. And it seems a little bit opposite with Trump. It really depends how the election goes, because there's so many there's going to be so many recriminations if it's an extremely close election. And I almost hope whoever wins – that it's a pretty significant one, because you're going to have so many recriminations about, oh, we're going to blame the Never Trumpers. Oh, we're going to blame the people who supported Trump in the primary for getting us in this road, because we should have had fill in the blank Cruz or Rubio or Perry or whoever is that person's candidate. So what I'm hoping, and we're seeing some sign of that, you know, it can get contentious. It's civil, but it can get contentious on Ricochet too. People saying, how can you not see that we have to stop Hillary, versus the people saying, how can you not see that they're both unacceptable, which is more along my lines, I'm thinking. But I just think what everybody to the right is going to have to do is take a breath and reevaluate and rebuild these coalitions, and hopefully in a stronger way, because you do have this ossified beltway culture, not only from the politicians, but also from all the nonprofits and the people trying to fundraise off anger. And every time a conservative compromises and decides he doesn't want a 15% flat tax, he wants a 16% flat tax. It just turns into this holy war. And I think we just need to get back to understanding, okay, we disagree about a lot of particulars. Let's look at the big things. Are you for a more limited government? Are you in favor of getting rid of this nearly $20 trillion debt that we have built up? And these are the issues
The interesting thing about Trump, too, is it hasn't been terribly substantive from either side, from Hillary or Trump. So the issues haven't been defeated, per se. We just aren't even talking about them anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, that's part of my frustration with this year is that we aren't advancing the ball even a little bit on important conservative principles. I mean, instead, we seem to be regressing. We have two candidates who both say we're not going to touch entitlements. Entitlements are going to kill us. And there's absolutely no way you could look at the world and not think that we need entitlement reform in this country and be a serious person looking at the future. And then this sort of this trade nonsense that both candidates are espousing, it flies in the face of rational logic. Even Barack Obama, left-wing socialist Kenyan Muslim, right? Even he got into power and thought, oh, yeah, free trade's a good thing. It helps people. They are right. You know, even Barack Obama, some things are true even if Barack Obama says they're true, and TPP is a good idea for this country. They're wrong about Kingston Pipeline. They're wrong about everything, but they're right about that. And the idea that we have to then reacquaint ourselves and our base and or to the extent that we do on these principles is something I think that the Ricochet member Hercules Rockefeller in his piece, George Will, the GOP and Conservatism, is I think he's right about a lot of that, there's a certain exhaustion. I have a friend who is a sort of a libertarian, and he was looking at the two candidates and he said, this looks like the exhaustion of the white elite, that the only thing they could come up with was a billionaire reality star who's completely, brand new to politics and shows it, or an ancient, decrepit figure from yesterday's politics with incredibly old, incredibly ossified policy proposals. That's it. And there's nothing youthful or new or fresh or even compelling about what either one of these people is suggesting. I mean, except maybe build a wall, right? The building the wall is probably the most interesting, compelling and arresting political idea to happen in America in, I don't know, two cycles, three cycles. So it is dispiriting, but I think that the vessel certainly is empty and it's up to us to refill it. I mean, I think there's two things going on. One is, what are we going to do if she wins? And what we're going to do if she wins is kind of probably retreat and figure out like what we believe in. We're going to still play this horrible, tactical, incredibly unsatisfying game in the House, in the House and the Senate, which the base is going to hate, right? Because they hate that. They don't like that. You don't make any progress. The progress the Republicans, House and Senate made has been to stop the president from doing things, which is nobody likes that. What I always hear from friends who are Trump supporters is this kind of wish fulfillment that will have this sort of avatar, this empty avatar in the White House, and will be able to pull the strings. Like, he won't know what to do about trade policy, but Larry Kudlow will be in there. Larry Kudlow will make sure he does the right thing. And it's all this sort of strange, hopeful kind of string pulling from outside that none of it relies upon a fresh idea or a fresh way of addressing the future. And that's what I find so dispiriting. I mean, the future is going to be rougher than the past. And we're not preparing ourselves or our children for it. And we're not preparing a market for it. We're not preparing American workers for it. Instead, we are getting larger and larger swaths of American body politic and telling them that they're victims and that there's somebody took their money. And so it's not just the traditional groups that we used to say that to in the past 20, 30 years. Now it's new groups. Now we have a Republican president saying the same thing. Like, no, you didn't lose the money. It was stolen by big, bad people. And there's something about that, I think, that if that slide is not arrested, we're in trouble. End of rant.
You're here.
Yeah, but it brings out your inner lurch. There you go, boys.
Well, we all have an inner lurch.
Fundamentally transformed, right, so to speak. The American character shaped and reshaped and finally turned in the other direction away from self-reliance and towards a sort of sullen, slump-shouldered shuffle with a handout.
Can I end on a hopeful note? I know we're going to wrap is that if, things kind of fall into place and what happens in November is what seems to have been on track to happen past year, which is that Trump loses. And we have President Hillary Clinton. She's an exhausted figure, will be a reinvigorated opposition party. But moreover, our national politicians, so our general elect candidates, can't unlearn what Trump has taught them about being bold and spontaneous and being real. Say what you like about Trump. He's real. Breaking rules when you want to break rules, speaking directly to the people the way you speak. You have to speak directly to the people, being unpredictable and being fun and entertaining. There is something about – there are lessons to be learned from the Donald Trump presidency. Maybe they're just style lessons, but – listen, we'll take whatever we can get that I think I'm sorry, did I say presidency? I meant candidacy. And I think that could be very hopeful. I mean, what you ask yourself is, are Republican governors and senators and congressmen and statewide politic office holders, of which, by the way, there are, I don't know, 20% more than Democrats. John, you know better than I what the actual number is. But we outnumber them, right?
Oh, definitely. We definitely outnumber them. And I really think the fight for conservative ideas is happening in the states. And you see red states just really pushing limited government solution. Fortunately, those are our poor benighted souls in California just see this encroaching state growing and growing like a beast. And one thing I think about either of these candidates winning is they're so deeply unpopular with such a large segment of the population. Here is my pie in the sky hope, hopefully a reason for optimism. Is that people are going to pay attention to Washington and politicians less and less and just dismiss them and just get to work yourselves. the only people who can make America great again, in my humble opinion, are the American people. It's not a politician. Politicians can follow our orders. They are our employees and should be treated as such.
Yeah, but given a minimum wage and whatever. I totally agree.
There is the idea advanced elsewhere, and I can't remember who it is, which I could, so I credit them, but that there's frustration on the left as well because the party has moved so far in the direction of certain progressive nostrums that people are frustrated by the lack of the lack of even more progress progressively. That the wars that we're having over pronouns on campuses have to be made national. We have to have the bathroom debate in the local level at every single possible point. All of these things that were just completely at the fringe of society are now they're demanding to be mainstreamed. There's a lot of people who A, don't care, want to be left alone, and B, actively push back against it. So we will see some interesting social battles coming in the next 4 years or so. And if Hillary wins, Rob's right. You go into the wilderness, you re-energize, you look around, you regroup, you find out what you stand for. And then come 2020, you find, to your astonishment, that Donald Trump was nominated again. We'd like to thank you all for listening to the Ricochet Podcast. If you're a newcomer, you know what? Go over to iTunes and leave a review. Preferably something glowing, but when you leave a nice review for us, it helps new listeners discover us, which keeps this whole shebang going. As well as our sponsors do, we have TrunkClub.com, Texture.com, which is a great magazine app, and GreatCoursesPlus.com, which is a great video learning service. And of course, Trunk Club will make you look better. Right. All of those are great, and the coupon code Ricochet will help you save money in each one of those instances. Then also visit the Ricochet store with lots of great Ricochet swag so you can walk about in public, swan about in public if you like, sockless like Rob, and proclaim to the world through the R that you are a member of the nation's fastest growing and most important civil center-right website. Thank you for listening. John, thank you for sitting in for Peter. We'll be back next week. We'll ask him all about the sex tape, which I believe Donald Trump has watched. So.
I never want to hear Peter Rock's sex tape in the same sentence. Thank you.
We'll ask him about that. And Rob, off to where you ever happen to be. And thanks, guys. And we'll see everybody at the comments at Ricochet 3.0.
Next week, fellas.
Thanks, gents.
Well, they call me Big Mama because I weigh 300 pounds. Call me Big Mama because I weigh 300 pounds. I can rock and I can roll and I can really go to town. Not a fire this morning if you take me home with you. Yeah.
Ricochet. Join the conversation.